The Green Bay Packers 2016 schedule has been released, but before we get to that, we're looking ahead to the NFL draft. We bring on Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com to look at the prospects he has rated unusually high and unusually low. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're looking ahead to the NFL schedule release, but before we get to that, we have a guest joining us today.
Expert interview.
We have Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com. Matt, how you doing this morning?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. We're glad to have you, and glad that anybody who's wading through us through these audio technical difficulties here, we appreciate it this morning. But Matt has been a former Seattle Seahawks intern for your Packers connection under former Packers head coach Mike Holmgren. And today we're going to get Matt to talk about some of the players he has rated unusually high and unusually low in the NFL draft. And Matt, let's kick this off with Jared Goff, who you have rated as a third round prospect. There's lots of comparisons to Aaron Rodgers just because of the Cal connection there, but safe to say you're not putting him in that category.
No, I don't think he's definitely not going to be the next Aaron Rodgers if I had to put money on it. With Goff, he's a three-year starter. He has 36 career starts, but he only has 14 wins. And you look at historically players who have that many starts and that low of winning percentage, just a 388 winning percentage as a starter, the only player that I could find comparable, even close to that, would be Jay Cutler. But as we kind of seen with any of those Bear fans are out there, or any of those former Broncos fans, will kind of attest that one of the lacking characteristics that Cutler kind of has is lack of leadership. And so, not to say that Jared Goff can't be a great leader, I just don't foresee him kind of having that extended long NFL career right away if he gets kind of thrown in as a starter. One of the kind of the other characteristics that I don't like about Goff is that 52.7% of his passes were between 9 yards or less from the line of scrimmage. He had 23 career fumbles, a 7.7% negative rate. You'd like to see that down there 5 to 6%. So he's kind of a higher risk prospect right now in our matrix. So for that, for those couple of reasons and a few more, I would rather have him drop down to the third round and then kind of be able to hedge my bet if I was an NFL team. I don't think he's worthy of being the first overall pick, but it looks like the Rams are probably going to go in that direction.
Yeah, that is interesting that they gave up all that real estate to go up and get him, or some people say Carson Wentz, but we'll see. We'll see. Matt, another player you have rated unusually low, DeForest Buckner, the defensive lineman from Oregon, and you have him rated as a second round prospect. So it's not, you're not saying he doesn't deserve to be in the league, but a lot of people have him as maybe even a top 10 guy. Why do you have him in the second round?
I mean, there's a definite reason why people have him as a top 10 guy. If you look at his senior year, he looks like a top 5 pick because the guy was just absolutely dominant. The issue that I have with him is that his first 3 years, he was a little unproductive. Now, I know Oregon players from the defensive line that over the last couple of years, Eric Armstead, who went to the San Francisco 49ers last year, he had absolutely no impact. And then Deion Jordan, a couple of years ago, went to the Miami Dolphins, absolutely had zero impact. The difference between Buckner and those two guys is that those two guys only played about 40% of the defensive snaps while they were at Oregon. Buckner actually played in over 1,200 defensive snaps over the last 2 years, and he played in 80% of those for Oregon's defense. So he was a consistent player out out there. The issue was that if he was really unproductive his first 3 years, and then he just kind of had that 1 year wonder, those guys typically have a higher bust ratio than guys who are consistently productive over 4 years. I will say that if he goes to a team playing a 3-4 defense, he's the number one defensive end in a 3-4 defensive scheme prospect in this year's draft class. I just don't think historically those guys tend to have a big bust factor, kind of having that 1 year wonder. So again, he has a little higher risk than I would typically like to take for a first round draft pick. More or less, I'd like my first rounders almost be guaranteed to be quality, consistent players in college, and he just kind of lacked that. So I would kind of wait to the second round to take someone like Buckner if that opportunity presented itself.
One more player who fits this category. Before we get to the good news, we'll do one more piece of bad news, I guess. But safety Keanu Neal from Florida. Now, this one's really interesting. Some people have him as high as a late first-round draft choice. You actually put a free agent grade on him. You know, why the big discrepancy there?
Neal's just not a very good safety. I mean, just point blank, he allowed 76.2% of the pass targets towards him resulted in a reception. He only had 5 pass breakups during his entire college career. So here's a guy playing, you know, in safety at Florida. You know, his opponents are, you know, swinging the ball around 40 times a game, and he can only have 5 pass breakups. Here's a guy that can't really come down to the line of scrimmage and stop the run. He only had 4.5 tackles for loss. He had 16 missed tackles last year. So the guy can't play the pass. He can't play the run. He has an average impact rating of just 0.9 impact plays per game. And for you Packers fans, last year Demarius Randle came out of college, and he averaged 2.2 impact plays per game. Haha, Clinton Dix averaged 1.3. And if you try to make that comparison, well, what does that mean between Neal and Haha Clinton Dix? That averaged about 5 impact plays over the course of an NFL season. That could be 5 interceptions, 5 sacks, 5 forced fumbles. And we all know sometimes a game can come down just to 1 or 2 plays. Well, Haha Clinton Dix and Demarius Randle are making those. Keanu Neal hasn't been able to make those at all throughout his college career. So I don't foresee him being anything more than kind of that 7th rounder free agency by our grace. He's just too high risk a player, and he didn't make as many plays or any plays really for that matter during his college career. So I would just bypass him all together if I was an NFL team.
Very interesting. Well, let's go on over to the guys you have rated unusually high. So guys you're going to think exceed expectations. And right off the bat, one of them I noticed was running back Travis Green from Bowling Green University. You have him as the 4th overall running back in this year's draft class, much higher than I've seen anybody else rate him. Why?
What we like about Green is that he's kind of that multidimensional back. He'll be kind of known as a traditional scat back. He's 5'10", 189 pounds. So he's similar to what the Broncos have in running back Ronnie Hillman. What I liked, even though he was kind of a smaller back, he's as consistent between his first half yards per carry and second half. So he averaged 5.7 yards per carry in the first half and 5.5 yards per carry in the second half. Now, a lot of the great running backs historically over the years will either average about the same or they'll get just a tiny bit better in the second half of games. I like to see that consistently. So there was no drop in production. He's a former wide receiver, so he has actually really good hands coming out of the backfield. He had 72 receptions throughout his college career. So here's a guy that, you know, if you put him down on third down, I think he can be a weapon. Most teams, on average, are about 60% pass to run ratios now in the NFL. So here's a guy that can be a 3-down back if you're kind of more of a heavy pass offense than a heavy run. So he's an exciting player who, you know, when he gets the ball in hand in space, he can kind of make those guys miss and kind of pick up some critical yards. So I like him. I know he's not really highly rated. I don't want to expect him to be more than like a 5th, 6th, maybe even a 7th rounder. But I think the guy can play, and I think he should be a little graded a little higher than he is by the traditional scouts. But we'll see when push comes to shove, when he puts those pads on, if he can kind of get out there and make some plays.
Another guy you have rated high, and other people have this player rated high as well, but you have him rated higher than I've seen anybody else, at least. Wide receiver Rashard Higgins from Colorado State. You have him rated as your fourth overall outside receiver. You have him as a first round draft choice, while others maybe have him, you know, second or third round. So why does he get that bump for you, and why is he a first round talent?
What I really liked about Rashad Higgins is that his numbers in 2014 when he was playing with Garrett Grayson, Garrett Grayson was a third round pick last year by the New Orleans Saints. Higgins' numbers were off the charts, and that's sort of what you would expect, right? I mean, you have a NFL caliber quarterback playing there, and you have this guy out there who he has some really good talent. But what really impressed me was, even though he dealt with some injuries this last year in 2015, Higgins put up really his efficiency metrics were basically the same. So here's a guy, sometimes you'll hear about a wide receiver running back when they say, oh, this guy didn't have the talent around him, but if he did, he would have put up really great stats. Well, Higgins didn't have the talent around him his senior year. They lost their coach, Jim McElwain, to Florida. You know, they lost Derek Grayson to the NFL. But here's a guy, he still put up the great numbers. So, you know, I like to see that consistent domination that he, and then that's what he put down. He had 33% of his team's wide receiver production, and he put in that combined with some of his combine measurables and his efficiency metrics, and he grades out very similar to current Pittsburgh Steelers Antonio Brown. So that's why I like him so much, is that he's efficient and he was dominant for a long period of time in college.
Let's go to the defensive side of the football, and a guy that's another interesting case here, defensive end Emmanuel Ogba from Oklahoma State, who you have ranked as your second overall defensive end behind only Joey Bosa. You actually have him ahead of players like DeForest Buckner, Noah Spence, Shaq Lawson. Why are you so high on Emmanuel Ogba?
The fact that he had 26 and a half career sacks. He averaged an impressive 2.2 impact plays per game. Coming off the edge, he has the speed, he has the power. He notched a number of sacks last year, under 3 seconds from snap to sack time. And as we kind of know that in the NFL, you need to be under that 3 second threshold. If you have a bunch of sacks and there are 3 and 4 seconds, it doesn't really do much when he transferred to the NFL, because guys are getting the ball out in 2.5 seconds. So you like to see them be able to get hit under 3 seconds for their sack time in college, because that way you at least know their skills can transfer to the NFL. He might not be getting the media attention people are talking about, but coaches that I've talked to, specifically head coaches, when I bring up their name, they usually are saying, yeah, he's a great gun. He'll be a great pass rusher, either situationally right away or in the next couple of years. So he might actually be one of the best pure pass rushers in this draft class, according to a few coaches I've talked to. So I like Ogba. I think he's going to be really good. He probably could either drop, maybe be a late first rounder, or even drop into that early part of the second round. But I think he's going to be a great, at least initially, a situational pass rusher in the NFL.
Another pass rusher, Wisconsin outside linebacker Joe Schobert. You have him rated as your third outside linebacker. You have him going perhaps a first or second rounder. That's a lot higher than I've seen a lot of people rank him that high. What do you like about Joe Schobert?
He's one of those guys that just does everything really well. He either can play the pass, drop into coverage, rush the passer, stop the run, plug a hole. He can really do everything. And so that's something that his versatility just brings so much value to him. He averaged 2.1 impact plays per game. He was one of the nation's most dominant pass rushers. 20% of his pass rushing snaps where he was asked to go attack the opposing quarterback last year resulted either in a sack, a quarterback pressure, or a quarterback hit. So here's a guy that was just absolutely, a beast when you were just let him loose out there and trying to attack opposing quarterbacks. So that's where I kind of see his true value in the NFL. If you can rush the quarterback in the NFL, you can make a lot of money. And I think Schobert can be that guy if you ask him to be coming off that edge. So I really like him. I think that teams are really going to value that versatility and along with that pass rushing. You kind of see what Seattle did with Bruce Irvin. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody like them were to pick him up because they like his length and they like his versatility. So I think Schobert might be one of the steals of the draft if he drops out of that first round. I really like him. I know Wisconsin fans out there who have watched him over the last couple of years probably like him just as much. So I see Schobert as being one of the steals in this year's draft if he drops out of the first.
One last guy I want to get your insight into here is Akron outside linebacker Ja'Tavis Brown, who you have as your fourth-ranked outside linebacker, another guy who you kind of have rated as a fringe first-rounder or a second-round guy, a lot higher than I see, you know, most people rating him. So what do you like about Ja'Tavis Brown?
I was really surprised that he didn't get invited to the combine. I mean, here's a guy that he blew up the regional NFL combine. You know, he measured just off the charts. But if you just kind of go by those measurables, but if you look at the play on the field, here's a guy with the MAC Conference Defensive Player of the Year last year. He led them in sacks and tackles for loss. He was just a dominant defensive player in that conference and throughout college football. He broke the school sack and tackle for loss records previously held by former Miami Dolphins great Jason Taylor. So here's a guy, I realize he's undersized at like, I think he's like 225, 230 pounds. He's about 5'11", 6 foot, so he's a little undersized, but yet when he was asked to play, he was not only dominant, he was one of the best in their school's history. He has a top career pass rushing mark. About 15% of his time resulted either in a sack, quarterback hit, or quarterback pressure when he was asked to rush the quarterback. So here's a guy that can really do a lot of everything, whether it's either stop the run. He doesn't get too engulfed by bigger offensive linemen. He's able to shed those blocks with pretty much ease, use his speed to kind of get to the ball carrier. I was really surprised to see that he was kind of not talked about as at least a second or third rounder. That's where kind of we would peg him to be. But, you know, if he falls in the draft at the sixth or seventh round, I think somebody's going to get an absolute steal here in a year or two, kind of work, maybe build up his weight a little bit more to kind of handle those NFL bumps and bruises. But I think he might be one of the bigger steals of this year's draft class and somebody that isn't talked about, but it will be have a long NFL career.
We'll keep an eye on him. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. The reason I love having you on is you're not afraid to think outside the box, and I appreciate that kind of different look to the way of doing things. Before we let you go, do you have a target for the Green Bay Packers at 27 overall? Maybe not even one name, but maybe a couple names we should keep an eye on?
I'd like to see them either go defensive line. I think there's just true value there, regardless of whether you're a defensive tackle or defensive end. Possibly Andrew Billings, if he was to fall there. From an inside linebacker perspective, Sue Cravens, I could see them possibly because he kind of brings that hybrid, whether he's kind of, he can drop into coverage or you can put Clay back on out to the outside. I think he might be a great middle linebacker coming to the NFL. You know, if you go on offense, I wouldn't be surprised if Josh Doctson was possibly a solution there at wide receiver. I know that they kind of got hit hard by injuries last year. It's never too bad thing, such a bad thing to have some quality wide receivers there on the outside. So I would look for Doctson from TCU. But again, if you go on the defense, I wouldn't be surprised with Sue Cravens or Andrew Billings from Baylor.
Sounds good. We'll keep an eye on it. Once again, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your insight, and we'll do it again sometime.
Oh, thanks for having me on. You guys have a great day.
Take care. Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com. We had him last year. We have him on this year. Love to get his insights when it comes to the NFL draft. And great to have him on the show. Great to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on.
Packers news of the day.
The NFL released its season schedule yesterday, and a word I've seen people use to describe the Green Bay Packers schedule is quirky. A lot of different quirks to this year's schedule, and I agree. It's a little bit different. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just indifferent. It's different. That's what it is. And the thing that I think is interesting about it is the streaks or stretches of games, and I'll kind of go through them here. And basically, you know, starting with the beginning of the season, the opener, but the Packers basically taking a part in three straight season openers is how it worked out. So the regular season opener, week one, they travel to Jacksonville for the actual league opener, you know, the game that opens the season. But then, kind of maybe the highlight of the schedule, I think, for a lot of people, week two, they go on a road for a second consecutive week. So it's not too often when you open a season with two straight road games, but the Packers do it this year. But what's interesting is where they do it at, and that is at the Minnesota Vikings for their home opener. The Minnesota, you might think that, you know, oh, the Minnesota Vikings, they have a brand new stadium this year, so they're gonna get the week one game, but they're actually waiting to week two. And I remember reading an article at ESPN.com kind of explaining it, saying, you know, they of course are gonna have preseason games there as well, and they kind of want to have a little bit of time to work out the kinks. Just so when the regular season starts, they're hitting the ground running there. And so that's why the Vikings themselves are on the road week one and then have their home opener week two. So the Packers go in there for the first regular season football game at a new stadium there in Minnesota. So that happens week two, Sunday, September 18th. And that, of course, will be a big one against a division rival, understandably. And I believe that is also a night game, so like a Sunday night football game as well. And then finally, the Packers have their home opener all the way in week three. So it is late September before the Packers actually have a regular season home. Of course, they're going to have preseason games before that as well. But week three, Sunday, September 25th, they open regular season home games against the Detroit Lions. So another division opponent there, second in a row, before having a fairly early bye week in week four. So that's kind of your open to the season. And then they have the next stretch of games. So that was the first stretch, like basically three straight openers to open the season. Here's the next weird stretch, in that the Packers actually have the next three consecutive home games during the month of October. And they actually have four consecutive home games, except that, you know, they do have a bye break in between. So that kind of makes it, you know, breaks it up a little bit. But after the bye, they come back three straight home games in the month of October, weeks 5, 6, and 7, three in a row against the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Chicago Bears. So all games within the NFC, you know, within the conference, not necessarily the division, but the conference. So that'll be an important stretch of games there, of course, I think, as well. So very rarely do you see, you know, three, let alone four, you know, straight home games like that, or away for that matter. So that stretch is pretty interesting. Then, you know, they go on the road, they come back home, and then there's another stretch. Now they have a stretch of three straight road games in the month of November. So another rarity here, in which you go on the road for three straight weeks. And they have the Sunday, November 13th at the Tennessee Titans to kind of kick off this three straight road games. They follow that up week 11, Sunday, November 20th at the Washington Redskins. Of course, you know, same place where they had the playoff win last year. So that'll get a little extra attention because of that. Another Sunday night game. And then finally wrapping up this, you know, three straight road games with the game at Philadelphia on Monday night, November 28th. So a Monday night football game that'll be on Monday night football. So there's another streak. And then finally, your final streak or final stretch of games for the season that I thought was really unique this year was the three straight division opponents to end the season. And they're broken up between home and on the road, but we're talking weeks 15, 16, and 17 here. And so we'll start with week 15, Sunday, December 18th at the Chicago Bears. So on the road. And then they follow that up Saturday, December 24th. So we're talking Christmas Eve, coming home against the Minnesota Vikings. This would be the regular season home finale on Christmas Eve, which is a Saturday. A little bit interesting there. When you know, Christmas falls on a Sunday, the NFL plays actually most of their games on Saturdays. So little bit different there, a little bit unusual, and then they end the season on actually New Year's Day, so Sunday, January 1st, at the Detroit Lions. So, you know, the last of three consecutive games within the division, so you could see the division race coming down to those three games for sure. I mean, it could be totally unsettled by mid-December, and then, you know, it'll come into focus by the time the season is over at the very end. It wouldn't surprise me at all if it comes down to the last week. We'll see how things play out first. A lot of things can happen between now and then, but it wouldn't be a stretch at all to see it come down that way. And you know, I suppose I neglected to mention just one thing in the schedule here that is pretty interesting, and I just briefly mentioned it before, and that stretch of three consecutive home games, you know, back during October, the last one of which, the game against the Chicago Bears, falls on a Thursday, October 20th, and all Thursday night games this year, if you don't, you know, haven't heard or don't remember, those are going to be those color rush games. If you remember the 2015 season, that was optional for all NFL teams. Some did it, some didn't. And the Green Bay Packers this year will be required to wear a color rush uniform this year, whether it's all green or all gold. I don't really know. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. But they'll be facing the Chicago Bears in a color rush football game. That should be a fun one. So Thursday, October 20th, we will see that and see what happens. So there's kind of your initial off-the-cuff reactions to the release of the Packers schedule. Like I said, quirky, weird, unusual, all these stretches of games that they face. And so it's interesting, to say the least. So it'll be a fun season, most definitely, and we'll continue to break down these games more so as time goes on. This is kind of just your off-the-cuff reaction here on this show, and we'll talk about it more next week as well as we bring in a new guest on Monday. But, you know, for the final segment of the show here.
The day ahead.
There we go. The day ahead in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday. It's the calm before the storm as the team's off-season program actually starts on Monday. And you just hope that, you know, players stay out of trouble for one more weekend before they arrive in Green Bay. That's kind of like always the worst-case scenario that you hope doesn't happen, as they get arrested or something. And it tends to happen more often when they're away from team facilities. Once they're in, you know, it's a little bit harder to get in trouble in a place like Green Bay. That's a little bit, you know, smaller market, a little bit more rural area, which is a good thing. You know, you don't want the players getting in trouble. But, you know, while they still may be away this weekend, you hope they're staying out of trouble. And because, you know, on Monday, the off-season program starts, and it starts slowly, with just kind of, you know, strength and conditioning at the beginning. We'll get into that more next week. But anyway, yeah, the calm before the storm. But for the time being, if you're looking for one Packers connection today, this Friday, the Packers are actually using one of their 30 allotted pre-draft visits on Friday with UTEP defensive end Roy Robertson-Harris. This according to Wes Hodkowitz of the Green Bay Press Gazette, who wrote a feature article on the player at the outlet there. Roy Robertson-Harris, he's interesting because he's a big defensive end slash, you know, edge rusher, edge defender, outside linebacker, whatever you really want to call him there, elephant end. He's 6'6" and 260 pounds. Wasn't a highly productive player at the University of Texas, El Paso, but, you know, it wasn't as if he had zero impact either. He just wasn't a star there or anything. But, you know, it's the size that intrigues, and you think that maybe this guy could be a diamond in the rough with a little bit more, coaching, a little bit more development. He could be something a little bit more special. And obviously, I think that's what the Packers are intrigued by is the size, 6'6" and 260 pounds. That they got a guy right now in Julius Peppers who's, unusually large. And I'm not putting, Robertson Harris in Julius Peppers category here, but you can kind of see how they might be looking for that kind of guy who can play both, outside linebacker and maybe be an interior rusher, looking for that kind of versatility. And they want to find out if this guy has got it. And that's why they'd be using a pre-draft visit on him to, maybe put him through all the medicals and have a physical and talk with him as well. So there you go. That's your connection Friday to the Green Bay Packers. And it'll be a lot more interesting starting Monday as the off-season program starts and players come back to Green Bay for several weeks, for a couple months even, just to work through the off-season and get ready for the 2016 regular season. With the release of the schedule, with the NFL draft, coming up here, things are starting to get exciting, and we're talking a little bit more football all the time here, and things become a little bit more real. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Matt Richner of PredictionMachine.com for joining us. And we'll be back again on Monday, as we usually do every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. If you've not done so already, my call to action, as usual, as always, if you've not done so, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. This show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. So the one small thing we ask in return, pretty please, if you could, go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV. It'll pop right up. Give us a rating and review. Doesn't have to be anything long, but it helps us get word out about the show and helps people find it and lets them know, hey, there's a pretty good Packers podcast out there and you should listen to it too. So we'd appreciate that. That'll do it, folks. Have a good Friday. Have a good weekend. Like I said, last one before the off-season program starts, so make it count. And we'll be talking some Packers football next week. But that'll do it, folks. I leave you today with a song called appropriately, Can't Wait Another Day by the String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
Every night I pace the hall, just waiting for your call, anticipating your next move, it's got me bouncing off the wall.